Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. We are recording on what was once called Friday, and what a week it's been. This is an episode that I think all three of us have been looking forward to, and we kept needing to push it off further and further. So we've had a lot of time to think about weird tangents, and that may show up in today's episode. My weird tangent for this is related to Peep Show. I love it. Mitchell and Webb production. The entire time I was watching Peep Show, I was certain that one of the characters was named Super Hands, like his hands were super. Anyway, I'm Ben.
I'm Noel. Yeah, but in fact, he's Super Hans, like the German name. The name that I associate with Hans Brinker and the Silver Skates. Do you know that story?
Yeah, I think more Hans and Gretel, but yeah, the Silver Skates. What's that?
Yeah, like? I don't remember what happens in him. I just know he's an ice skater, and he has these silver skates, and they're somehow blessed with the power of the gods. Then there's Hans Christian Andersen. He's a biggie as well, right? Who did you have? We've got Hans Zimmer, the famous film composer.
Hans and Franz, SNL.
Yeah. Well, that one hasn't aged very well. That one's a stereotype.
But you know who always ages very well is our super producer, Casey Pegram. You know, Noel, I always think of Hans and Gretel. Hansel. Wait, it's Hansel and Gretel,
yeah, but
right?
You could call him Hans for short, no doubt.
If you're friends, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's strange. I think it's a cool nickname. We actually have a new coworker in our virtual office named Hans, I believe. Am I making that up?
No.
Can we have a Hans?
We've got a Hans. He's in charge of all the Will Ferrell stuff, the Big Money Players Network.
That's right. That's right. Well, go you, Hans. Hans is a great name. I still think Super Hands is a funny name. Today's episode is about a Hans, a very intelligent Hans. A Hans who was so intelligent, in fact, that he was known as Clever Hans. And it was all due to his mathematical prowess. I don't know, how cool would it be, like, if you had a descriptor for your name, like blank Casey or blank Noel or blank Ben, like, you know, Magnificent Casey or Numismatic Noel. I don't know. That's like,
it sounds like the type of nickname one might give themselves in the hopes that people did not realize that was the case. But that was definitely not the case with Clever Hans, because surprise, surprise, Clever Hans, not a human, a horse.
Right.
A horse is a horse, of course, of course. Remember Mr. Ed? I think they made him look like he was talking by putting peanut butter on his teeth. So he would eat the peanut butter off his teeth, and then they would, like, you know, do bad, like, lip syncy kind of horse lines.
It didn't age well.
Mm-mm, no.
A lot of the plot points seem relatively anticlimactic upon a rewatch. But, you know, I miss those days where TV executives were apparently like, just catch us on a good day and throw the craziest things you can imagine at us. We might say yes to them.
Kind of like how podcasting used to be. But things are tightening up a little bit. I would say largely for the better. But speaking of, you know, golden times, you know, for culture, there was a time in the early 20th century when the public was fascinated with this idea of wonder animals, which were domesticated animals that could do everything from solve riddles, do math problems, even somehow, you know, have discourse with their owners about things as high-minded as philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Or even predict the weather. In some cases, tell people's fortunes by, you know, pulling a strip of paper with a message on it forth from some collection of strips of paper. This story takes place in that era, in the realm of the wonder animal fad. It was almost too extreme to be known as a fad because it was so prevalent, it was so ubiquitous at the time. So Hans, as you said, Noel, is a horse. And according to the public at the time, He was a very, 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 very clever horse. According to a German math teacher named Wilhelm von Austin. Would you say that's the right pronunciation?
Is it with an O or with an, it's probably with an O, isn't it?
Austin, maybe?
It's Austin.
Austin, there yeah. we go.
Well, it's got that Austin.
Yeah, so von Austin is a guy who is determined to prove the full potential for intelligence in the animal kingdom. And he went through a number of phases, a couple of also-rans, right? He taught a cat, or he tried to teach a cat and a bear how to add, and then he came up with his, like, crowning success, which was this horse, Hans. And we have to mention, too, that before this time, psychologists and the general public, experts and laymen alike, didn't really think about whether animals had all those kind of those cognitive pieces that we just considered part of the human existence, like emotions, consciousness, intelligence. I know every pet owner out here is like, my dog has all three, or my cat is a monster or something.
Well, and you know, we've talked about this and God, all the time. I mean, how humans kind of have this desire to make everything human-like and to kind of anthropomorphize, you know, animals. That's why I like animal cartoons that like walk around and wear pants are so popular. Remember that guy that drew the cats wearing pants? That was a huge craze. That we talked to Gabe about. I've already forgotten his name because I'm a bad person, but I remember the cats wearing pants and how popular they were, and it's because people love to do that, to see ourselves in cute and cuddly creatures, even when none of those traits exist. So, for example, you know, we'd like to think that a horse or a raccoon or some other creature could do these things and we are able to imbue them with human-like powers, but chances are they've been heavily trained and are responding to very specific cues and are essentially just, you know, performing rote tasks at the behest of a trainer or master. Not to spoil anything, but this whole thing does kind of blow up in the face of von Austin, and also the whole culture of animal wonder animals as well.
Yeah, so Clever Hans is sort of the harbinger or the catalyst for what would come to be this enormous wonder animal fad or era. So in the early 1900s, Clever Hans starts getting into the news, the media of the day, because, as you had alluded to, Noel, he could solve math problems or appear to do so, and pretty complex ones, like not just adding 4 + 7 + 9 / 2 or something like that, but he could apparently also do square roots and carry on simple conversations all by a primitive form of communication. He would tap his hooves. So, hey, Hans, how many garbanzo beans are in this line? And Hans would be like, whoa, 3 beans. That's amazing.
And if I'm not mistaken, when Mr. Ed didn't want to be heard by other humans besides his master, he would do stuff very similar to that. If he wanted to communicate with Wilbur, but someone else was in the room, he would buck his head or stomp his foot to like indicate. So I'm pretty sure that that character was probably inspired by all this wonder animal business, but that's just me conjecturing there.
Yeah, I think you're on the spot there because the creators had to be aware of it because Clever Hans is early 1900s, Mr. Ed is 1960s. I still, you know, I'm not the expert on the world building or mythology of Mr. Ed, but I don't understand why they had to keep him a secret. You know what I mean? Why can't you just be like, hey, this horse can talk to you? People would love that. People love animals and they love the idea of animals talking, except for maybe cats. I know I sound like I'm dinging on cats, but I have two here, and you've probably heard them on the show. So Clever Hans is not the first of these incredibly intelligent animals, at least to the mind of the German public. He's just the most popular, and he's kind of riding a trend in the zeitgeist. People were interested in seeing the intellectual abilities of non-human animals because they thought it could imply further things, things that went beyond intelligence to the realm of the metaphysical. If an animal can debate philosophy with us, the reasoning goes, might it not also have sentience? Might it not also have something like a soul? It's a profound and noble question. But also, you know, this is a world where magicians and like traveling shows had trained horses, dogs, parrots, peacocks, things like that, to appear to be capable of reading and writing.
Ben, I'm having a hard time remembering all of the details. We do a lot of these and they get a little fuzzy over time, but we did an episode about like a farm that was stocked with these kind of show animals that would do tricks, and like a chicken that could solve math problems in sort of like a Skinner box type of situation by pecking on things. Remember this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What was the deal with that one? I feel like I shouldn't even bring it up if we don't have any remotely identifiable characteristics about it other than there were like smart animals. It turned into a TV phenomenon, and then like it all kind of like fell out of fashion. And I feel
the
like
chicken
it,
box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Someone's screaming the name about this at us right now, but hopefully it's endearing, dear ridiculous historians, that we sometimes cannot remember our own show.
But I bring it up because this was part of kind of a traveling showman type world, you know, before TV. Magicians and traveling performers had often trained horses and dogs and pigeons to do all kinds of things, ranging from, you know, tricks and climbing up, you know, those kind of poles with the little rungs on the side and diving horses and all of that kind of thing that we probably remember from movies. And also even like the idea of having performing flea circuses, which was usually like a total ruse, I believe, where there was no actual fleas in there and it was just little things attached to fishing line.
Don't ruin this. Don't ruin this for me, dude.
I'm really sorry, dude. I hate to be the bear.
No,
hate
no.
To be. Also, bro, wrestling, not real.
That's fine. That's okay. Not a serious, that's not near the level of entertainment that a flea circus is.
That's totally fair. But we start seeing these tricks getting a little more advanced, like teaching some of these animals to appear to be reading or doing arithmetic. There was even a, quote, learned English dog that could supposedly lecture on ancient Greek poetry in the 1750s. Ooh. I don't know how they could confirm that. We'll have to do a little more research into that point.
We can confirm that it probably wasn't.
That's fair.
A college level discourse. But also, that's not the only smart dog in town or in the world at this time. There was a French lecturer who had what was described as a little savant dog that would assist him in demonstrating properties of physics. And at this point, you know, I think a lot of us here in 2020 have a different association with the phrase wonder, because wonder now is sort of always automatically a good thing, right? But back then, wonder referred to something that didn't quite fit in to the natural order of things,
huh,
or the divine order. So something that's wonderful or wondrous could be a miracle, like sprouting wings or healing suddenly from a wound, but it could also be infernal, diabolical, dark, and occulted. So wonder animals were kind of edgy too.
That's really interesting, Ben. I think of like the eight wonders of the world and stuff like that. So I guess you're right. It could have a negative connotation, but then you also think of Professor Marfolio's House of Wonders, you know, almost a stand-in for like the word oddities or like a freak show or something, right? This sort of does skirt that line, doesn't it? It's not as despicable and abusive as like, say, a carny freak show type situation where you're literally exploiting human beings, but it's also not the best for, you know, kind of exploiting these animals and making them kind of prance around for the amusement of others. I feel as though they'd prefer to do other things than that, you know, but I guess a living's a living if you're a schnauzer.
No cat food for you until you can fully explain the concept of Plato's cavern.
or at the very least, the Pythagorean theorem.
Right. Geez. We all have to have jobs. Why? What about you, Fido or Tiger or whatever your name is? So there's another factor here that's pretty interesting. And it's one that I don't know about you guys. I had not given a lot of thought to this previously. I never thought about when widespread pet ownership began, because growing up here in the West and in this day and age, it's, even if you don't have a pet, it's common for other people to have pets. You know, they have their dogs, they have their cats, they have their parakeets, they have their serpents, their cockatoos, their rocks, their hermit crabs, whatever. Point is, a lot of people have pets. But back at this time, widespread pet ownership was just becoming a thing. Animals were around as sources of food and labor, as livestock. And you had to be pretty upper crust to just have a dog because you liked the dog. You know what I mean? Like a Shih Tzu was just for the elite. Shih Tzu is a companion dog, doesn't really do anything, right? Shih Tzu doesn't really apply here because I believe it's from ancient China. But that's the point. Like, you have to be doing pretty well in life to just afford this distraction, this companion that doesn't do anything. You're not going to eat it. It's not going to work for you.
Oh, well, let me get an extra mouth to feed. How about that? Right. That's a flex right there. You know, I mean, talk about weird flexes, historical or otherwise, literally choosing to have this kind of useless thing. Okay, I'm clearly not a pet person when I say this, prancing around with you that you have to feed and take care of. And, you know, sometimes in the case of very extra pet parents, clothe, put little sweaters on them and stuff. Victor mm-hmm. Hugo of Les Miserables fame was such a pet owner. He had a beloved poodle whose name seems to be lost to the historical record, or at least this Atlas Obscura article that we're looking at. But apparently, so beloved was Victor Hugo's poodle, and so well-treated was this beast, that it actually escaped and made the homeward-bound-esque journey from Moscow back to Paris to be reunited with Hugo. So we definitely know that there is a bond between animals and their owners that's kind of approaching something like love. Is it, you know, just pure survival instinct? I don't know. I mean, if a poodle would make that journey just to get back to the master, it's probably for more than just, you know, self-preservation, right?
Sure. Well, way before there was widespread middle-class ownership of pets, dogs had been so profoundly domesticated, right? It's interesting. There are a lot of animals that can be tamed, but the number of animals that we would consider domesticated, that number is actually very, very small. You know, cows, sheep, pigs, dogs, cats, by the way, domesticated themselves. They're not even really on the list. So dogs do experience, as we'll come to find, dogs do experience emotions similar to those of humans, but this wasn't something that the scientific community really grokked or got their arms around at this time. We just knew that pets appeared to be able to do some remarkable things. But in any testing case in the 18th and 19th century, it turned out that these incredible claims didn't hold up to scrutiny, a lot like people claiming to be mediums or to exercise some sort of supernatural power. You see numerous reports of otherwise very, very intelligent people saying, you know, my dog knows philosophy, not just in German, but also in Latin. My dog mm-hmm. knows Latin. And then when someone tried to exhibit this for a critical audience, they would find that those claims just didn't bear up. And that's the world in which Wilhelm von Osten.
Very good, Ben.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks. I was in my head. I was practicing this. This is the world in which von Osten emerges. He's already had a long career as a high school math teacher. He's retired. He's in 19th century Berlin, and he gets fascinated with this idea, right?
He's desperately looking for something to fill his twilight years with. So why not, teach animals to, like, do math and teach classes for him? That'd be fun. He definitely believed, it seems, that animal minds were very similar to those of children, human children. And he actually used some of the classroom techniques that he had, you know, learned as a teacher himself to work with his Arabian stallion, Hans. And his notion was that he was teaching Hans, not training him. So it's one of these things, too, where it's like, I think he believed what he was doing. I don't think he was setting out to, like, you know, bilk a bunch of rubes out of, like, you know, their nickels or whatever. But let's see how the story goes. So within a couple of years, Hans learned to count and then do, like, basic math. And like you said at the top, Ben, using that that series of hoof taps. New York Times reported on this in 1904 and was pretty glowing in their reviews. He said that he could do what Hans could do, almost everything but talk. And that included he could tell time. He could differentiate between different objects, you know, like different coins made of different material, whether it be silver or gold, etc. And von Osten really wanted to separate Hans from all that other stuff we were talking about before. Hans was different. Hans wasn't one of these, like, weirdo, oddity, freak show animals. He really was a learned horse in the eyes of the mind of his owner. And so he really kind of pushed that line, which I think is what got it so much more attention, because, you know, those traveling carny type shows we were talking about, that's just part of Americana. Everyone was used to that. There was nothing special about that. This kind of elevated it to the next level, to the point where the frickin' New York Times is writing about it.
Right. Yeah. And this becomes something that is debated in salons, intellectual meeting places of the day. Let's build out further one of the profound implications of this. If science is proving that animals possess something like a consciousness and therefore possibly something like the metaphysical concept of a soul, then religious figures get involved and scientific figures get involved, often with contradictory aims, because Charles Darwin's theory of evolution, still real hot new thing. This is before everybody kind of forgot that his weird serial killer-esque habit of eating every animal he cataloged. He had proposed in 1872 that animals and humans had a shared emotional inheritance from evolution, that all animals, or all, you know, mammals at least, could experience surprise, grief, and pain. And for some religious figures, this could be seen as a threat to humanity's previous special status as the only creature on Earth with thoughts and feelings, which seems like a lot to pull from, you know, tap, 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 tap kind of conversations. But there we are. Okay, so we've basically established how clever Hans would communicate, but maybe we can go in a little more detail about this. So he had, as you said, Noel, it was very important to him, very important to von Osten, that he was teaching Hans, right? Not training him. And he did this for more than a decade. Typically, he would ask Hans a question, and Hans would either nod his head for a yes or a no, or he would tap his hoof, to indicate numbers. He was also said to be able to show directions by turning his head. He could tell the difference between left and right. He could recognize colors. He could read clocks. He could identify playing cards. And he understood a large number of concepts. So von Osten would ask something like, how much is 2/5 + 1/2? And then Hans would answer.
I barely know the answer to that. I'd have to, you know, do some figure, and math's never been my strong suit, but yeah, it's true. I mean, it's certainly, for a guy like me, you know, who can barely add fractions, I certainly would be impressed.
I mean, it's weird, right, that this horse appears to be pretty great with fractions. Hans would answer that question, how much is 2/5 + 1/2, by tapping 9 times. Oh, wait, now I have to count the taps. By tapping 9 times. Probably not that fast, and then tapping 10 more times, and that answer would be interpreted as 2/5 + 1/2 is 9/10. And people were like, whoa.
Do you think there was ever a moment where a clever Hans maybe hesitated before the 9th tap, and people were just on the edge of their seat, like, is he going to get it? So if he only taps 8 times, I'm no longer impressed. And then he taps the, yes, math!
I hope
for
so.
Fun! I love the idea of being entertained by math.
you know what? There probably was a little bit of that tension. We'll see why. We'll see why that probably existed. But apparently Hans was even good at word problems, Noel, like the bane of so many grade school kids.
He seemed to have a penchant for recognizing language, recognizing even cleverly worded questions. And this comes from a fabulous article on AmusingPlanet.com, Clever Hans, the horse who could do math. So, for example, let's say I said to Hans, I have a number in mind. I subtract 9 and have 3 as a remainder. What is the number I had in mind? And then he has a pregnant pause, followed by 12 riveting hoof taps. Okay, and that's the answer. Boom, the crowd goes wild. And again, these are examples from this Amusing Planet article. Here's another hypothetical. In the number 365,287,149, I place a decimal point after the 8. How many are there now in the hundreds place? To which Hans would tap 5 times. And just a peek behind the curtain, you guys, I could not even decipher what this number was without the decimals and the commas. I had to re-say it several times, and finally Ben very generously came to my aid. So again, I would have been blown away by this horse.
Dude, maybe you should get a horse. Maybe you should reverse that. You're not super bullish on pets, but
well, I have a hamster.
You
can teach my hamster.
You do have a hamster.
You can teach my hamster to do math. And so instead of horse clops, it could just be like scratches, cage taps.
Yeah, I think that's great. Or like have the hamster, you know, maybe throw food pellets or count with food. Well, that's tough because it'll eat them. Probably also just shouldn't do it with juvenile hamsters.
No, but you're right. I definitely need a math hamster because, you know, not like my phone has a calculator on it or anything.
I want a math raven. Or a math octopus. I would also accept a math tiger, but we'll see why in a second. So, like you said, I want to harp on this for a second. Clever Hans then was not just gifted in the realm of mathematics or arithmetic. He also wowed crowds by spelling out words and names of people, and this must have taken forever. Talk about tense. So each tap would be a letter of the alphabet. So one tap, that's A. Two taps, that's B. Imagine if someone's name is like Zachariah. That's going to take forever to spell. And he also appeared to have a great memory. You could ask him something like, Clever Hans, if the 8th day of a month comes on Tuesday, what is the date for the following Friday? And boom, 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 he would tap it out. He would tap that out for you. The weird thing is, he also seemed to have all these other abilities. As long as Von Osten was with him, spoiler, he could recognize tones. He could recognize people in photographs, which is very unusual for a non-human animal to do. He could tell you what time of day it was. He could tell the difference between straw and felt hats, which was maybe a bigger deal back then. I don't know. And of course, we said he knew different common colors. This led some people to say, you know, Clever Hans might be as intelligent as a 13 or 14-year-old child.
That's certainly a shade further than Von Osten was even willing to go, because he initially thought that animals had the same propensity for logic and reasoning and math as a small child. So we've graduated from small child to like tween, at least with his crowning horse achievement, Clever Hans. Pretty impressive stuff. Hold the horse. Hold your horses. That's the expression. We're having that kind of, you know, moment where we're struggling because we want to keep going, but we also like, you know, this is supposed to be a 30-minute-ish show, and this episode is very clearly going to go over an hour. So hopefully you don't mind. I think we're going to cut it into two.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to start. You know what I'm going to start doing for everybody, and us especially? I'm just going to start saying that we're doing a two-part series whenever we do an episode, and then we could just cut that line out. If we get back to a one-parter. But you're right, Noel. The story of Clever Hans needs the full treatment. We have to go the whole shebang. We have to give him the whole stable here. We didn't even talk about later studies in cognition. There's a parrot we want you to meet.
Yes, and not to mention, this story's got a pretty fascinating twist. round about the end. So stick around for that. In the meantime, gosh, huge thanks to Gabe Lugier, researcher extraordinaire, who hipped us to this topic and many others that you enjoy here on this show. He's a real mensch, and I'd love to have him back to talk about something other than anthropomorphized cats. But that was a fabulous two-parter as well. I think it's about time, don't you think, Ben?
Yeah, fully agreed. While we're thanking people, I'd like to give out one of the coveted Ridiculous History Thank You Awards to our good friend, super producer, Casey Pegram. Casey, I'm going to replace our usual verbal award with an actual award. So this may look like an unopened jar of Vegemite, but I want you to know this is going to be the official Thank You Award for Ridiculous History.
Fantastic.
Don't get too excited. Awesome. It's in the mail. And also, thanks, of course, to our own clever Hans, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister. He's always trying to stay a hoof ahead of us, but we're going to have him on some more episodes coming up sometime very soon.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.